Therefore, he said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. The beginning of his kingdom, now we see what he was hunting, men to serve in his army and in his religion. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Achan and Calneh in the land of Shinar. All right, now get that in mind. Did you see that new word in the Bible, Shinar? Nearly everybody is tied up in an agrarian society. Most of the people mentioned in Genesis chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 are shepherds or farmers. It is a farming, agrarian society for the most part. And Genesis 4 alludes to some cities being built. But it wasn't a swinging city like New York or Houston yet, you see. I mean, it takes time to build, you know, a population up to get a big city. There were some city slickers, city folk. But the majority of the people were living in an agrarian community. In other words, it was basically family. My children just moved right across the road. And they had children and they moved, you know, we're just multiplying around each other. Now, think what an incredible, devastating influence and change it would be on that kind of small community society to suddenly thrust on it a kingdom. One man raises himself up, draws other families unto himself with his charisma, with his leadership, with his religious beliefs, and draws the men from these families into an army. Now, nobody else has an army. He's the only jolly army going. And you see that all of a sudden, one man can begin to dictate what will and will not happen because he's got stroke. And all you've got are you and your 10 sons and your grandkids are too young, and there's 4,000 of us and there's 12 or 13 or 14 of you. So Nimrod stands out in these verses. Here's a kingdom. Think what that would do to a family-oriented society. All right, you got it. Now, it tells us about the beginning of his kingdom. And then God just leaves Nimrod hanging, the rebel, the spotted one, hanging, goes on and finishes a whole bunch of genealogies and comes to chapter 11, verse 1. Would you read it? Now, the whole earth was of one language. See, now God's gone back to Genesis 10, 5. He said he divided the earth up by their tongues after the flood. And we're sitting there with a big question mark. How did God do that? And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Ooh, we've seen that word before. It says, they said to one another, come, let us make brick, burn them thoroughly. And they laid brick for stone. Everything's a fake. Why didn't they just use stone? Everything's a counterfeit. They made brick for stone. Had a better idea. And slime for mortar. Why didn't they just make some mortar? And they said, come, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, pride, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth. See, Nimrod is hunting. He's a mighty hunter. He's hunting people of one mind with him that wants to stay and make a name. Now, back in Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, right after the flood, when they came off the ark, God told them in chapter 9, verse 1, to spread themselves, be fruitful, multiply, and spread all over the world. That was God's command. These people rebelled under Nimrod the rebel. They said, no, we're not going to spread and do what God said. We're going to stop in one place, found a kingdom, and we're going to build this tower that will reach into heaven, and make ourselves a big name, a reputation, lest we be scattered. In other words, lest what God wants to happen happens. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men built. Now, let me make sure you understand something. These people aren't stupid. They don't think they're going to build a tower so tall that they can look into God's bedroom. What does it mean here they're going to build this tower of Babel to look into heaven? All right? We don't have to guess. The Bible tells us. But the trouble is, we don't read the Bible. All of chapter 47 of Isaiah is about Babylon, which is located on the plains of Shinar. Babel Babylon. All right, it's just, it became, the area called where the Tower of Babel was became the country, you know, the area around it, of Babylon, which is still located on the plains of Shinar. Chapter 47 of Isaiah, verse 1, come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon, sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called tender and delicate. Now, I just want you to see that God's talking to Babylon. If you read all the way down, he's telling them, you think you're big stuff, but I'm about to bring judgment on you. Okay? And notice in verse 5, he says, sit and be silent. Get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. Now, Nimrod, I'm just going to tell you this, and then we'll read down here. Nimrod, according to secular history, married a woman. Now, we don't know her name in the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell you her name, but the Bible tells us her title. Nimrod, we know now, we're getting some information together. We know Nimrod formed the first kingdom. We know where it was, on the plains of Shinar, and we know that he's the one then, I'm trying to show you, he is the man that's leading the building of the Tower of Babel. Chapter 10 just goes right into chapter 11, where God now picks up and explains to us what they were doing. Now, as I said, the Bible does not tell us his wife's name, but it does tell us his wife's title. Her title is given in the book of Jeremiah many times. Her title was the Queen of Heaven, which you Catholics can immediately recognize as what you gave the title to Mary, but you see, you got it from the cult. The cult poisoned your church years ago, nearly 2,000 years ago. Y'all were poisoned and didn't even know it. Now, her name, according to secular history, was Semiramis, and this was her title. Now, let's see what they were doing. So, it says she was the Lady of Kingdoms. It's talking about not only Babylon, but the founder and his wife, the Lady. And you Catholics in here, you notice you refer to her as Our Lady. That was another one of Semiramis's titles. All the titles that went to this woman, your church has now put on Mary. Okay? Now, notice with me down here very quickly at verse 12. God, all through here, you can read it for yourself, is talking about the things that Babylon was doing, what they were doing. And notice it says, stand now with your enchantments and with the multitude of your sorceries in which you have labored from your beginning or from your youth, from your inception. Aha! We now know that God says they were practicing sorcery from the very beginning of the kingdom of Babylon. Verse 13, you are wearied in the multitude of your counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and save you from the things that are going to come upon you. So we see other things that they were doing. Astrologers, stargazing, monthly prognostication. Now we know what they built that tower for. To study the zodiac so that they could peer into the heavens studying the stars. They wanted to get up high to study the signs of the zodiac. The constellation that dominates the winter sky is called Orion. And Orion is just another word in a different language for Nimrod. It is Nimrod, the name Nimrod, in another language. In verse 9 says, speaking of the beginnings again, said that there was a multitude of sorceries and great abundance of enchantments. Okay, now come back to Genesis chapter 11. So now we see what was going on there. Verse 6, the Lord said, behold, the people are one. They have all one, and that's their religion. We're one, and we're one with the force. Okay? We're one. The people are one. They have all one language. And this they begin to do. Now, nothing will be withheld from them, which they have imagined to do. Now, by that, God doesn't mean that they're going to become gods and do anything they want. He means anything that the lost, fallen imagination can dream up to do. I know what let's do. Let's just take someone that's awake and alive and tie them to an operating table and let's just cut on them and see what happens. Hitler did that one. See, anything they imagine to do, they're going to do. I know what let's do. Let's all of us take off our clothes and have an orgy. And let's throw some animals in with it to keep it really spiced up. The Bible talks about bestiality and that the Canaanites that God destroyed were practicing bestiality and they had their little children involved in it. That's one reason why God told Joshua to kill them all. Listen to me. Do you want to adopt some 8-year-old that's been practicing sex with adults and animals for 5 years, and you want to adopt him and bring him in? Do you want to know what he's going to teach your little kids in about 4 days? I'm going to tell you, that's something really hard to get. Don't worry about the little kids. When they died, they were protected by covenant. Many of those little kids, see, weren't responsible. They went to heaven. But not the parents. And it's again, it's in chapter 8, verse 21. Speaking of Noah offering up animals right after the flood, it says in verse 21, the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Alright, now God is worried that with one language, all these evil imaginations are just going to get worse and worse and worse, and we're going to pull it off. We're going to all act together. Now, turn back another time to see the same thought in chapter 6, verse 5. Chapter 6, verse 5 of Genesis. God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. This is after the fall. So God, having said that man only thinks wickedness, if I leave them with one language, I leave them this place, all that they're thinking about, wickedness, they're going to pull off. And I'm going to save them from themselves. I'm going to confound their language. Because they're in witchcraft, they're in sorcery, idolatry, they're all going to get demon-possessed. And I'm going to save them from it by confounding their language. At least give them a chance. Now, doesn't that hurt? Did any of you really see what God said? That the imagination... See, listen, the cult teaches this. Deep down, y'all, all of deep down inside, there's something basically good in all people. God says, no, deep down inside, there's something wicked as hell in all people. And therefore, having that deep down inside, they're going to use it to do wickedness or to think wickedness and plot wickedness. So, that really hurts. See, the cult hates these verses right here. It teaches the exact opposite of the cult. Every time you hear someone say, and they may not even be part of the cult, someone in the cult said it to them, and it sounded good. Deep down, I just know there's something good in him, deep down. His mother probably told him that one. And she didn't even know about the cult. Because, you know why? We want it. We want to walk the fence. I want my dirty, impure thoughts so that I can sleep with my wife and pretend she's my secretary to kind of jazz things up a little bit. I want to be saved. I want to be saved, but I want all the pleasures of sin. Now, you recall that Moses had to make a choice. In the book of Acts, in chapter 7, tells us that Moses made that choice, that rather than enjoy the pleasures of Egypt for a season, listen, he's a prince. He can sleep with anything in that country. I don't care if she's married to you. We just kill you and take her for the prince. You understand? He's got the whole jolly army with him. But Moses chose the things of God rather than temporary pleasures.